I want to start off by thanking Ed and Donna Stroh sponsoring the Shir Le'ili Nishra Sipora Fega Bas Yaakov. That's Mrs. Faye Stroh, Ed's mother. His yard site is in a couple of days. Tomorrow, a night. It's this evening, in fact. It should be Le'ili Nishmasai. And so it's wonderful to see the entire Stroh family around, or almost the entire Stroh family around for Shabbos. It's beautiful, Mr. Shem. It should be Le'ili Nishmasai. Also, we're learning Lirafua Avram David ben Rabbi Eliezer, who is undergoing surgery this morning. Mr. Shem, this should be a refuah, and a refuah gemura, a refuah shlema. For him, everything should go smoothly. I also want to just take opportunity to welcome my mother, who's joining us for this year. Which got a lot of good nachas to have my mother here to enjoy and appreciate. This year, I'm also would like to dedicate the Le'ili Nishmas Chana Leah Bas Tzvi Shalom, which is my aunt, actually, who's almost at her second yahrzeit. She was actually killed in a motor accident, and my aunt was a very cautious driver from as a teenager. I annoyingly cautious, and she was driving to a conference. She used to be a journalist for medical conferences and for medical issues. She used to write in magazines and a. She was driving on an out-of-town country road, and somebody, seemed like an unlicensed driver, was overtaking onto oncoming traffic, and that was it. So when I'm thinking about traffic Torah, this specific shir is the Le'ili Nishmas. It's almost 2 years, and to a very fine lady, somebody had a great influence on my life. So I'd like to start off the shir itself and think about that. This is actually a really, really fascinating topic. It has incredible ramifications. And we're going to go through some halachic components, and we're going to go through some aspects of machshava, where we can learn from this. I really appreciate all the submissions. A lot of people sent in notes and ideas and stories. So I really appreciate them. There's going to be two I'm not going to have a chance to get to today, just because of the purview of the shir. So Saul asked a very interesting question about ways, contributing to ways. Do you have to report on ways? Traffic, is that an incumbent upon oneself for safety? So I'm not going to get a chance to get to that because it will be beyond the purview of the shir. And Avi was asking about fighting traffic tickets. And, you know, the way tickets are fought, that you push off the court date until the cop doesn't arrive in court, according to many of these. So the question is the permissibility of that? We're not going to deal with those specific questions. We're going to try and incorporate a lot of the other comments which people submitted throughout the week. I appreciate it. And let's start with the following question. You know, the question really is this a shir worthy topic in the first place? Let's, you know, before we start giving a shir, is this something the rabbis have a word in? In the end of the day, you know, let's leave the rabbis to talk about, you know, the sizes of sukkahs, you know, the kashrus of spatulas, you know, maybe even, you know, the time of mincha and maariv. But, you know, traffic, you know, like, let the rabbis have a break here, you know. So actually, it happened to be that Rav Asher Weiss was asked the question. There was an individual who was putting together a book, and the fellow was talking about traffic laws, halachic traffic laws, and he asked him many different shailas. And Rav Asher Weiss's first response was, the rabbis have a responsibility in this particular area. First of all, I would like to add before what he says is that, first of all, it's cathartic. Let's be honest, it's nice to actually be able to complain about the way people drive. But number two, and more importantly, he quotes the Truma Sadeshin, which is an early medieval commentator who wrote Responsa. And in source one, this is what the Truma Sadeshin is being asked. The Sho'el, the person asking, who happens to be in this instance himself, he wrote the Responsa to himself so he could answer the specific questions he wanted the public to know about. So the Truma Sadeshin is asking about the following situation. There's a halach in the Gemara that, let's say, a person marries somebody else who has lived in two previous marriages, and that spouse in the previous two marriages, Rachman al-Itzlan, passes away. Can a third person marry that person? Or is there considered a danger in marrying that person or not? Now, this is, you know, again, today it's a little more complex. But could we say that there's an unknown, you know, this person is perhaps a symptom of danger? And so he says, well, we see that people do it. Talmidei Chachamim do this, and they get married to such people, and we are not concerned. He says, is that permissible? So his response is in this first source is Teshuvah Yirah. It would appear Delav Shapir Avdi Deloy Kapti. It doesn't make sense that people are not worried about this. Our rabbis taught that one should be concerned. And they were in wonder about people who weren't concerned. He quotes a precept in Aramaic, which is that chamira sakanta miisura, danger is more of a concern than isur. I mean, what is asur or mutar? And therefore he says, v'chi hechi debased in chayovin afrisho meisura, hachonami misakanta. Based in is the responsibility to make sure that their constituents are not eating treif, that they're not transgressing isurim. There's a greater incumbent responsibility, and that is to make sure that the people that are following them are not doing dangerous things as well. Similarly, the Gemara in Moed Katan suggests, the Gemara in Moed Katan is talking about basic communal needs. So the Gemara is talking about various things that Beis Din is responsible for. Now today it's a little more spread out. But in those days, Beis Din was responsible for paving roads, for making sure communal functions were actually operating. So the Gemara tells us in Source 2, this is Moed Katan, Daf Hamud Aleph, the second line, Uminayin Shim Lo Yotzu V'Osu Kol Elu. If the Beis Din does not take their responsibility to do all these things, these communal functions, shekol domim shenishbechu sham male alav hakosu kilu heim shavcham, it is considered if they don't do this as if they themselves are responsible for any loss of life on those roads that they didn't pay. The Gemara then quotes a pasuk because it says vayu alecha domim, blood will be on your hands. Does anybody know where that's referring to? What was that? Er Miklat, right? So we're talking about where the blood is on the hands of the Beis Din. So says Rosh Weiss, he says it's more important to talk about these types of things when it talks about Sakanta than even Isura, right? One has to be cognizant, one has to be aware. As a community, we need to be aware of these things. And therefore, by the way, the sisterhood's defensive driving course is being offered as well this week. So for those who are able to, besides saving money on insurance, it's always a good investment to recalibrate ourselves. So Rav Asher Weiss is saying, look, first of all, this is very much a halachic topic. So he says the following. Well, let's divide up. His question really is about breaking the law, but there's different types of breaking the law when it comes to traffic. So we're going to deal. Let's deal with the halachic component first, and then we'll move into the machshava as well. So he divides up all infringements into four tiers. And we can slot everything else into this. So the first tier would be, let's say a person is driving 85 miles an hour, right? So it doesn't make a difference whether you're in New Jersey or whether you're here, if it's 20, if it's 30 over, but you're driving 85 to 90 miles an hour. You're driving at a dangerous speed. That's one level, which is something which is obviously dangerous. Okay, something which is obviously dangerous. I like to throw into that myself is, if you're texting when you're driving, okay? So you're texting when you're driving at a high speed, that's tier one. Something which is clearly dangerous for yourself and those around you. Number two.
Also 20 below.
Right. So if you're driving at a speed which endangers people, that one is less to endangers people, but you're right, it is true. In certain cases, that is also a danger. Then there's a second tier. What happens if there's something which you're not doing, it's not immediately dangerous to people, but it could prevent certain problems. So for instance, the example that is given is, let's say you are a new driver or you have a new driver in your family and you don't put up the sticker that there's a new driver in the car. Now that's not immediately dangerous to other people, but the fact that you don't, if you would have it there, it may allow other people to have a little more patience around this car. So it's not as immediate a danger, but nonetheless it would contribute to the safety of the roads. Third tier, what happens if you arrive at a traffic light, the traffic light is red, And you know there's nobody there. You look down 50 blocks, nothing, nobody. You want to cross the street, there's a red traffic light. And you walk across, you cross when it's red. In certain countries, it's more dangerous to stop at the light. But in the end of the day, are you allowed, in this case over here, where it's most likely, almost 99% sure that there's not going to be any problems. You're disobeying the law. But there is an odd chance. You don't always see everything. You don't see who's going to speed around the corner. You don't know those things. But the likelihood is very, very little. And then the fourth tier is, let's say, not putting your insurance documents in your car. So that's illegal. You have to carry your insurance. You have to have your registration. You have to have your insurance documents. You have to have your driver's license. But let's say you're driving without them, right? So let's say you're driving without them. Are you endangering the public? No, but you're doing something illegal, right? So four tiers of danger. What is the halacha in all these cases? So Rav Osher Weiss starts off by saying, tier number one, where you, let's say a person's driving well over the speed limit, a person is texting when they're driving, he doesn't talk about that, but this tshuva was written a little while back. This tshuva, to buy out of interest, I heard Rav Aryeh Leibowitz quote, and I wasn't able to locate it. I reached out to Rav Aryeh Leibowitz, he couldn't find exactly where it was at the time, and I did a little bit of research. It's actually, if you're to, Rav Osher Weiss says tshuva, he has response. And so I was looking. You know, this to me, the response is divided into four sections of Shulchan Aruch. Orachan about ritual practice, Evan Ezra about marriage and relationships. Then there's Yoredeh about Isser and Heter, and then there's Choshen Mishpat about law, like we'll call it business law. So which section would you expect to look for in this response? I would have looked for this in Choshen Mishpat, right? And I couldn't find it. But it happens to be, it's actually in the section of Yoredeh about Isser and Heter, because this is a tshuva which is adapted or added on to a sugya which talks about making a ma'akeh, making a fence around one's property, which is a biblical command. At the end of that, that's where he talks about this particular, he's responding to somebody who's writing the sefer. So he says the following. He says, a person's driving at such a high speed limit. He says, not only is that a transgression of an Isser Torah, I mean, say, it's not that you're just breaking the law, you are actually transgressing Torah law. How do we know that? He says, because the Torah tells us in Source 3, Iraki Shomer Lachosh Mo Nafshecha Ma'od. The Torah tells us, Nishmarta Ma'od Nafshasechem. Your lives are in endowment. You're renting the vehicle of your body, right? In the end of the day, so you don't have the right to treat it dangerously. Number one, but more than that, he says that even worse than that is the Torah tells us Lo Yisamol Adam Re'echo. You can't watch when your fellow person, your fellow human being is in danger. Or so now the question is, in this particular case, is you're not just standing by when somebody's life is in danger, you are actively endangering it by driving this way. You know, on the defensive driving course, if you take various of these defensive driving courses online, they show you various videos about episodes that have happened, which are really jarring episodes. I remember one case, when I took it a few years ago, one case they talked about where there were two people came to a light. One guy has a very, I don't remember what the make of his car. Another guy comes up, pulls up with a Corvette, and the Corvette starts revving his engine, and the two of them take off. Their wives are in the car, two men, two, of course, driving, and their wives next to them. They take off, they speed down the road, and they get into such a race that one of them veers into the oncoming traffic to be able to overtake and hits head-on another car, man and wife in the car, both the men killed immediately. And what happened was that case was taken to court, and in fact, the driver of the Corvette who started revving his engine was found guilty for manslaughter. That means to say because he was instigating this beginning of this race, a shocking case, he was considered guilty. Now, the problem was the person in the oncoming traffic had nothing to do with this. A father of the two young kids, nothing to do with this. But the point is, says Rav Osher Weiss, it's not about you only. There's an Issur Torah about the other person too. And let's not make any mistakes. When a person is speeding, it's not just oneself. So that's what Rav Osher Weiss says. I mean, clearly there's not even a discussion. I know with texting and driving, there was a trailer which was released in the East, which was it's like before a movie. So it's like a 30-second clip, and the picture is like you're driving. You use like steering wheel and cell phone on wheel, and you know the countryside. Right? And you see the person driving, it's as if you're in the driving seat. And then a text arrives on the phone. You can see that a text arrives on your phone, and it's like you reach out, and as you reach out, the car crashes and the screens shattered in front of you. And everybody in the audience jumps. Right? And you say, unfortunately, let's not make a mistake, unfortunately. How dangerous is it? Statistics are around. We don't have to go too far. That's an Issur Torah. That's what Rav Osher Weiss says. The question is, what about the three lower categories? Where it's not exactly overtly dangerous, but there are concerns. So by the way, just before we get here, just a few exceptions you may bring to the table. Number one is expert drivers, right? So what you say is, you know me, well, that's about regular folks. But you should see me. I can do, you know, I can do a three-lane weave with my left knee, right? I'm all right with this. I can do a handbrake spin, 360, no problem, right? There was this Pepsi ad a number of years ago where, right, what was the name? Gordon NASCAR, what's the fellow's name? Jeff Gordon, right, you know, took a second-hand car dealer for a ride in his in the yard. You know, Jeff Gordon says, that's true about the regular folks, right? But me, you know, I look what I can do. So the question is, does Allah have dispensations for folks like that? And the answer is absolutely not. Now, Allah, the Gemara says in Shabbos, if you'd beis ma'beis, the Allah is on Shabbos, you cannot read l'oraner. Why? The answer is shema yata. You might tip the oil, which will be a transgression of an Isur Shabbos by giving the lamp more oil. And says one of the Amorayim, it says around the Tanaim at the time, that Rabbi Yeshua ben Elisha says, Ani ekre v'loy ate. I'm going to read, and it's not going to be a problem for me because I know that I'm not going to do it. So, Pam achas kora ubikesh lahatos. And what happened was, one time, he started reading, and lo and behold, he did. Right, he forgot. There's no dispensations for expert drivers in this business. It's all the same. It doesn't make a difference how qualified or unqualified we are. Number two, enforcement. This is an interesting debate. So what happens if you're in New York, and let's say the speed limit is 55, and you're going at 59. You're going maybe 61, right? So now, in experience, it's generally not those kind of drivers that the police are pulling over. Right, police are usually pulling people over. Well, there's arbitrary guidelines, but people say like more than 8, more than 10 miles per hour over the speed limit. Right, so it depends. You know, it depends. You know where you are and how likely it is, how close to the end of the month it is. Right, but in the end of the day, so do you say that this how far does this go? So, well, this relates to actually the three lower tiers. Why? Is it a problem to do something illegal, which is not as dangerous, right? That's the question that Rav Asher Weiss has asked. So he says, look, you can explore it from a number of different angles. Number one is that if we say the rule of sakanta chamira, sakanta mi'isura, that danger is more heavily weighted in halacha than isur and heter, that means we couldn't apply the same rules of isur v'heter. In isur v'heter, we have ways of dealing with doubt. So, for instance, we have Rav, we follow majority. We have Chazaka, we follow what's the pattern which has usually happened. There's a lot of things we can usually rely on. We can't rely on them when it comes to Sakanta because it's of a heavier weight in Halacha, number one. So he says, well, maybe you can apply the famous rule which we call Dina to Malchus Adina. Maybe you can say, well, there's, you know, the law of the land is the law of the Torah. And this is a specific law when it applies to specifically the parameter of Mamonos, financial law. Right? So the question is, the Rav Asher Weiss goes backwards and forwards, is this financial law? Right? La halacha. Is this financial law? This seems to be more of a societal prevention. At the end of the day, he goes backwards and forwards and he says, whichever way you're going to look at it, there's one thing which is always in play, and that is a very famous rule. He quotes over here, let's take a look at the Minchas Asher in source 6. He says, Yesh loymar oid, traffic law is, in fact, incumbent. Why? Because of a public, we'll call it rectification or regulation. The ministers of transportation are, in fact, our representatives for this. Let's say the community gets together and says, nobody's going to do this particular action anymore. It's dangerous. We don't think this is a good idea. And everybody agrees that this, in fact, is going to be the law. Then that becomes what's called takanas sibur, which is binding, not just legally, but halachically. And he gives examples. And going to the end of the paragraph, the last line, he says, if this is the state law, that means to say that everybody voted and everybody agrees that the Ministry of Transportation or the Secretary of Transportation in this particular state has decided that in New York it's 55, whether it be in New Jersey 65, whatever it is, that is the law. So we actually, it's bounding halachically, as not legally and halachically. as to follow that. So what do you say about a person now who's going 59? Meaning, so you're 4 over. You're 6 over. Or is that part of that or not? Is the fact that it's not enforceable part of this or not? A big debate in the poskim. A lot of poskim say that if it's not enforceable, if nobody's doing it, if the police aren't pulling over for, 59, then maybe that's not part of the, if you're going on the highway and there's nobody going at 55, and everybody's going at, 65, and you're following the line, maybe it's not a transgression. Hard to know this. Poskim say it's still a problem. David Levy is not here this morning. Actually, sent me a very interesting comment that philosophically this is a question as to do we view when you look at this, do you view that it is wrong ideologically to go over the speed limit, or that no, psychologically, that the government is telling us that we know that you're going to go a little over, so we sort of put a limit so you get to the right space. It's very hard to know what this is. The more, we never err by being more cautious. Be it as it may, the question is like this: what happens if he deals with the halacha? What happens if chas v'shalom of somebody who in fact drives and they drive under the influence, or somebody who drives without their license, or they don't do tests on their car? You speak to the person and you try to convince the person, and they're not leaving their habit. Are you allowed to report them? So he says absolutely. He quotes the Minchas Yitzchak that such a person is a danger in many instances. You have a responsibility to report such a person because that is in fact a danger to the community. In fact, Yonah just mentioned a story that happened 20 years ago where he was cut off just over here on Burnside and Rockaway, and he recognized who the driver was, and he called up the dad to say, I saw your kids, and he was really, driving terribly. And the dad's response was, says, if he didn't hit you, why are you complaining to me? And unfortunately, that it did not end well. A number of months later, Rahman al-Itzlan for that boy. But we have a responsibility mitzad, not just the public, but mitzad also in that person themselves, the people themselves, to try to help people, to save people from themselves sometimes. This is a responsibility that we have. By the way, just to one little nuance within this, is that Rav Osher Weiss is very careful. The person who asked the question said, well, maybe you can say that they're a roide. Maybe you can say a person who drives dangerously is a roide. Now, roide literally means a pursuer. There's a halachic category called a pursuer, or roide. The problem is that what's the halacha about a roide? You can kill them. So is the person said, do you consider a person who's driving dangerously a roide? And he says, absolutely not. We don't exaggerate into halakhic terminology. Just this last week, unfortunately, I don't know if you follow the local news. In Pennsylvania, there was a young lady, an 18-year-old honors roll student in Cobb County, and she was jockeying for a place on the highway, as she came onto the highway with her fellow. A guy drove up next to her, shot her in the head, and that was it. So I'm saying, these kind of things, unfortunately, it gets very serious. And this was just literally last week. They're still looking for the perpetrator right now. And these kind of things become very, very dangerous. So anyway, we try to the best of our ability. And this is the halachic component of it. Rav Osher Weiss ends this whole section with a very important comment, which leads us into our next section. And that is, in the source 6, the second paragraph, he says, Af milvad kol zois, despite all of this, choshuv lahadgish, deloy lechol she'ela yesh tshuva berura ba'alocha. Not every question has a very specific, sifkot, where you can read exactly what the case is. Ach milvad alocha yesh b'torasenu akadosh yosodos nosofim shei musar derech eretz midas chasirus akadomer. Our tradition has a system of values, not just a system. Therefore, va'avim kosh likboy b'masmarois b'chol inyan u'maaseh im yesh bo isur. Therefore, we can't really say in every case, is this exactly halachic? Is it not exactly halachic? We don't know the exact case. Ve'ein biyodi likboya as midas hasakone im lo yisle odom shalat nahag chadash. I can't tell you the degree of danger you have now put the traffic around you by not putting up a learner's, a student driver sticker. I can't tell you the exact statistics of that. Ve'yesh lifamim nahag chadash sheyesh boy das zakenim ve'yesh nahag vatik sheinigo she nihigos nihigosay musukenes yoser. There are new drivers who are like who are experienced, and there are old drivers who are still driving like they were when they got their permit. Right? He says, because that's all they stuck with, is their that type of driving. It is clear as day. Certainly a person needs to obey all traffic laws that are there to save lives. Don't rationalize. Don't make your special rules for yourself. There's certainly the way that you act is beyond, you know, there might be within the scope of law, a person can do terrible things. So now, what I want to do is in the next a little bit, is to analyze some of those things which are not, we'll call a very, very gray area. Maybe not dangerous, maybe somewhat dangerous, but where we learn important lessons from. Ever have this following situation? I've been noticing this a lot recently. I want to just give you an induction of my experience of New York driving first. So when I first came to America, I came for Camp Hask many, many years ago. I remember I visited a friend in Washington Heights, and to get from Washington Heights to the GW Bridge, you have to go along Amsterdam and you have to cross two lanes of oncoming traffic without a light. So, you know, there I was innocently sitting in the passenger seat, and this fellow, you know, like literally, you know, with a space of 1 inch from the car that was about to hit him and going around the back of another car, gets around to the, and I thought to myself, oh my God, oh my goodness, Hashem, please make sure that I never drive like that. And then a few years later, when I was a happy inhabitant of Washington Heights, the only way to get into the George Washington on-ramp is to do that because nobody's stopping. So that was my induction to New York driving. Now, there's something I noticed, and maybe tell me if you've experienced this before. You're driving along the roads, and let's say I'm going to use specific examples to the five towns, but these are everywhere you go. You know, you're driving along the road, and suddenly the car in front of you, you're on Central, and the car in front of you suddenly slows down to a stop. And you suddenly stopped in the middle of the road. And then they switch on their indicator, their signal, right? In South Africa, we call it a flasher. Okay, so they switch on their signal, and you realize they want to take a parking spot, but they didn't want to tell you about it until they actually stopped. Right, another example. You're waiting at a red light. You're the second car from the front, and the light goes, and the car in front of you doesn't move. And then they switch on their signal to show you that they're turning across traffic, but they didn't have the common decency to tell you before, and so you could have gone to the side. They decide only afterwards to tell you. Right, another example. You're coming down a two-way street, which is got cars parked on both sides. Let's imagine a grove, right? And there's only space for one set of cars in the middle. And you're coming along, there's another car coming in the looking direction, and they flash their lights at you. What are they saying? So where I grew up, what a flash light means is, please, go ahead. I realized soon that in New York, flashing lights means if a person flashes their brights, which by the way is illegal, if a person flashes their lights, it means, I'm going, get out of the way. So what I realized was, is an interesting thing, is that why do people use their signals in certain areas? Sure. For themselves. They're not using it for anybody else. It's only when it's convenient for themselves. And I realized that there's actually two reasons why we signal. An example, you know, recently we read Parashas Tazria Metzora. When it talks about dealing with the Metzora, the Torah tells us, source 13, Vatzorua asher yeh bo anega, a person who, that's Rachman Litzon, contracts the nega tzoras, but Godov year for Rumim, Varosho year for Ruah, has to wear particular clothes. He covers his head. I apologize. This is source 7. But Tome Yikra. The person says, Tome. I am Tome. I'm impure. Says Ibn Ezra, why do you repeat it? Why is it necessary to repeat that? Says Ibn Ezra. He's not just saying it for himself. He's saying it for the rest of the public. The reason why we signal to the public, the Torah says, is because for the safety of the public. It's not just about what you need to get. It's about everybody else knowing. If the next time you drive, take a look and notice how many people are signaling to get somewhere or because they want to tell people where they're going. Just look at that. It's phenomenal. How much of a breakdown? And next time we need to go somewhere, how many times do we not signal because we don't feel that it's going to be a problem? We're just getting somewhere. Another example. Moshe Rabbeinu is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Moshe Rabbeinu is on a mission. After 7 days of negotiation, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you're going to Egypt. What does he do? He's actually in the Sinai Desert at this point in time because he's by the snare, by the burning bush. What is the first thing Moshe Rabbeinu does? He goes back up to Yisroi. He goes, now Yisroi is in the land of Midian. We're talking about, you know, Syria kind of area. So he goes all the way up north to ask permission, and then he goes all the way down south back to Egypt across the Sinai Peninsula. It would have been much easier if he just sent, you know, somebody else. It would have been much easier if he sent a letter. You know, hey dad, you know, just something came up, you know, and we'll see you soon. Something like that. But in the end of the day, he went himself, the Pasuk tells us. And Rashi tells us that maybe he made a covenant with Yisrael. The Ha'aymek Dover, the Netziv says that no. You know what? It uses even Yisrael's name of Yeser, which was his earlier name. It says, you know what? Because it's common decency to tell people what you're doing. It's common decency. You live by the person. You're married to their daughter. Just tell them what you're doing. Right? There's basic decency. When you're driving on the road, it may not be that the person behind you feel needs to know about where you're going. But you know what's common decency? Switch on the indicator, put on the signal so people know what you're doing. Okay, so there's no one around. I don't know if it's necessary. But I'm saying most of the kind of times where I'm noticing this, I'm around behind the car that's not doing it. So I think, you know, on a basic level, we don't just signal for ourselves. We signal for the rest of society. Number one. Point number one. Number two. Anybody been in such a situation? You're driving along, and somebody cuts you off, and you make sure that you go in front of them and cut them off, and you get to the front of the, and you get to the front, and you feel all good with yourself, and the person drives up next to you, and you notice it's the nurse.
What?
You notice it was the nurse who treats at your pediatrician, who's been so nice to you. And you realize that you just cut her off now. And you realize that in cars, you're not that anonymous. You know, it's interesting that when we're driving, we often look at cars as if the car is like a sort of a individual, right? Even, have you noticed that Lexus, you know, their cars are becoming looking angrier and angrier now, right? The slanting lights right on the inside. It's almost like the car has a personality itself, right? So what happens is over here, yeah, Cars 3 is on circuit right now, folks. But at the end of the day, how anonymous are we? So it's interesting, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos tells us, Mishnah Avos says in Source 9, Rebbe Omer, so this is Rebbe who's quoting this, that at the end of the Mishnah he says, I apologize, different sources in the different quotes over here. This is in Source 13. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Histakel, the second line, Histakel b'shlosh dvarim. Look at three things, and va'iyata boli de'aver, you're never going to come to sin. Da malam ala mimcha, know what's above you. Ein ra'av oizen shemas v'kol ma'asecha b'sefer nichtovim. Know that there's a watching eye, a listening ear, and everything you do is being written down. Centuries and centuries, it must have been very hard to appreciate that until we have lived in a generation where every breath you take is being recorded and reposted, and it's very hard to get away with anything today. That's an example of how it works. In Shemaim, we have a bit of a key in to what's really going on over here. The Vilna Gaon says on that Mishnah, in the next source, he says, "Kol ma'asecha, quotes Iyov, biyad kol adam yachtom ladas kol anshe ma'aseil." You know what? When you do an action, it's as if you're signing off on it on your own hand, that everybody's going to know about it. They say Kabbalistically, that when a person gets to the next world, all the pain they caused others is going to be evident in front of their eyes, and the pain they inflicted upon others, whether it be anonymous or not anonymously, they're going to be feeling, because it wasn't anonymous. It doesn't just disappear. It doesn't go away. In fact, the way that the Sefer HaTanya writes and the Lev HaTanya, Perek Lamed Beis, is he talks about how all of us are, in fact, and he's talking specifically about Jews, are all connected as one soul. So you think, you know, well, you know, what happens if I snub, I ignore, does it really make a difference? And the answer is yes, well, we're actually all connected. The only differentiation that we have is the bodies, right? Meaning to say that our bodies sort of give us different personalities. But the less we focus on the differences, the more we realize we're actually one entity. And you know what? The non-Jews recognize this because they blame us for everything altogether, right? In the end of the day. So it'd be better if we had the realization that in fact we are all the same. There's very little differences between all of us. There's no such thing as an anonymous crime. There's no such thing as you're cutting off somebody and it was just that car and you win the race for that period of time. I think it's important to realize this, because sometimes the anonymity of cars gives us this equalizing power, which isn't in fact a rightful anonymous power. The next idea is something which has always struck me. Here's the situation. Imagine the following. I want to add one story to this, just an appreciation of how far this goes. When I was in Yeshiva in Kerem Yavne, Rav Rivlin was the Mashkiach, Rav Avram Rivlin. He said the following story, which is a shocking story. There was a young man. What happens like this? He was once in the Tachanah Merkazit in Yerushalayim, and he sees a guy. He sees a soldier there. And this soldier is like, what he called a chiloni lahachis. You know, like, you can see, like, he's not just irreligious, but he's religious, you know, the shaved head, the earrings, the tattoos, the, like, you know, like, he's really, really there. But he recognized the face. And, like, he knew this face from somewhere. He couldn't put it out. So he actually is waiting in a separate line. He goes over to the young man and he says to him, you know, he says, my name is Avram Rivlin. You look very familiar. What's your name? And the boy says, oh, I'm so-and-so. He says, do we know each other? He says, yes, you know, actually, I was in Kerem B'Yavneh, I was in Yeshiva for 1 week. So what happens is, well, I came from a weaker high school background, and I came to Kerem B'Yavneh. It was a big step for me to go to Yeshiva Tezder. And I came to Yeshiva, and clearly, I was the only one from my high school, and I was put in a particular room, and I really wasn't with the program, meaning I just didn't have the same skill sets as all the kids coming from the different tichonim. And I felt very vulnerable. And I remember that I was trying really hard, but it wasn't working out. The chiddush of the shir was just beyond me. And I came back to my room one day, and my friends were talking about something, and I interjected something I'd learnt in the day, and I obviously missaid it or didn't say it the right way, and they all burst out laughing at my face. So this is that day. I picked up my bag and I said, "This is what it's all about. That's it for me." And he left. And he left the yeshiva, and he left everything that that was it. It was too much for me. He was so embarrassed. And he said, "I'm sorry. You know, this is not the place I'm supposed to be." So Rav Rulin said, "If you were to go ask those three other roommates of his when they're at Yom Kippur, and you say to them, well, you know, what do you have to work on this year?' And they'll say, well, you know, maybe I was a little late for Seder. Maybe, you know, I took Ben Azmanim a little early. Maybe one Shabbos I stayed a little longer at home." And you ask them what their alchets are. He says, let's do a calculation. Let's say this young man now is driving from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv. You know, his family lives there, and he drives there on Shabbos. Let's count the amount of times he puts his foot on the brake every Shabbos, every Isser that he transgresses. And that's accumulating on whose account? Not fully them, but they do have a responsibility in that. Do they even realize what their comment did for that boy? Do they even know how many Isurim are transgressed, or hundreds of Isurim are transgressed on Shabbos owing to their comments? Because they laughed? So it says, just a reminder about the anonymity or the lack of anonymousness of our actions. That's what Rav Rulin was saying. It comes back to this one. Now the situation. Imagine the following. This to me is such a remarkable lesson in life. It happens to be that you're speeding along, and there's somebody else who's jockeying to overtake you. Right, so, and you manage to not let them in, or they cut you off, and you get in front of them, and you feel so proud of yourself, and then you realize that after beating them, they take an exit off the highway before you take an exit. So you're racing them the whole time, right? And you're trying to get ahead of them, but what happens? They were going somewhere else. So what was the point of the whole exercise in the first place, right? Now what was the point of all that racing? So the Mesillas Yesharim tells us, and this is an important lesson in life. Saw 16. Yisrael Hashem tells us, the first chapter, Yisoid HaChassidus, V'shoresh HaVoida HaTzmimo, the root, the foundation of all piousness, and the basis of all complete or pure work, She Yisborer V'Yisames Etzel Adam, Ma'achoy V'asoy Ba'olamo. A person needs to know what their point in the world is. Now notice over here, that the Yisrael Hashem, what's the pronouns that he uses? Whose purpose and point in this world? The person themselves. This is a very personal exercise. Our point of view is not about Yenim's perspective, point of in life. It's not about somebody else's particular purpose. It's our purpose. Every person has to understand what their unique life is, their endowments, their challenges, and their opportunities. That's their responsibility. Nobody else's. You can't be working out somebody else's map. Because you know what? You may be racing against somebody else in a particular arena, and they're taking a different route off the highway in life. They're going somewhere else. Isn't that interesting? In the end of the day, we're racing so many other people, but they're not on the same route as us. They happen to be converging for one little bit on the same highway as us. They're not going the same way. They didn't have the same background. They don't have the same emotional makeup. They're not necessarily supposed to achieve the same things, right? But what are we doing? We're racing them. Who should we be racing? Ourselves, right? In the end of the day, that's a tremendous lesson we can learn from traffic. People are racing. Well, what are they racing for? Who are they racing against? We're racing against ourselves, not other people. And finally, two last lessons. One is patience for the guilty. So here's the situation. I'm going to give you an example from locally, but this happens everywhere. You got onto the Van Wyck. You realize there's terrible traffic. You want to get off on the first exit over there, Rockaway, on exit 2. But you know what happens? Everybody else has just realized that as well. So there's a line of cars along the right-hand side. A line which is going to take you half an hour, 25 minutes, just to get onto the slip road. Happens in Williamsburg as well, by the way. You know, you're going on the BQE, you're going down south. You're trying to get into Williamsburg, where I think it's Ateras Avram is. And the line is backed up half a mile. So what happens? What does everybody do? They go around the side, and then they come just to the exit, and they start and they poke in, right? And everybody else is waiting there. So you, now, imagine yourself on both sides of the equation. You've been waiting there for 25 minutes, and you're just about to get there, and Mr. Important comes along, and is about to come in, right? And you've been waiting here the whole time, and you've been honest, and you've been, you know, you did everything you should have. So what do you do? What do you, you just close the gap, right? You're not letting that person in, right? They're going to wait like everybody. In fact, they should reverse to the back of the line, and that's where they should go, right? Now imagine imagine the other side. That you're driving along the highway, you're cruising, you're watching the sky as you should not be, you're listening to a shear, and you realize it's your exit. But now in the meantime, that's what all those cars were there for, right? So now you have to turn in, nobody's letting you in, right? So on either side. So it happens to be the Tomer Devora, Rav Moshe Cordovera, the Ramak, has a sefer in which he talks about the 13 attributes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem interacts with us in this world. And he says the following. That Hashem interacts with us in this world to the degree that we interact with other people. Meaning we set the tone for the way Hashem judges us. How's that? So he gives examples. He talks about the 11th Midah, or the 10th Midah, which is called Titein Emes Liyakov. Give truth to Yaakov. So he says, what does this mean? This is one of the 13 attributes. Midah zu sheyesh li Yisrael, source 17. Ma'ala ma'alas oisom ha'benonim she'enom yoidim nisnaig lifni mishur asadim. It's the way that Hashem deals with average people. People who aren't extremely pious, people who aren't extremely evil, regular Joes. And Hashem gives them truth. He says, Hashem yesh lo midas emes, sheets outside metzius. I apologize, the break of the lines in the Hebrew is shifted around, yeah? Hamishbara Yoshev Elohim Misnagim Boilam Bi Yosher, Misnagim Hashem Imoim Be Emes Merachem Aleim Altsad. The breakup of the Hebrews is shifted here. Hayoshua Mishpah. What he's saying is outside, because again, sometimes when there's an apostrophe, what it does is the Hebrew shifts sometimes in these fonts, is that what Hashem does is that Hashem realizes that we're all, you know, fallible human beings. And even though we make mistakes, Hashem sometimes gives us a chance as fallible human beings. He says, you know what, I'll give you a chance. I know that you're not perfect. I'm going to give you a little bit of credit. When do we trigger Hashem to do that? He says, let's say when you're in a situation, and a fallible human being makes a mistake. A fallible human being actually does something which might have not been so much of a mistake. It might have been a little wanton. In the end of the day, you give them the space. Somebody's trying to cut in. You know, in the end of the day, it doesn't. It's not going to the 2 seconds or 3 seconds. You just let them in. You wave them in. You know, you give them a space. Says the Ramak, Rav Moshe Cordovera, when you're able to give, you know, the poor human beings who make mistakes all the time and do sometimes negative things, and you give them a little space, that triggers the midah of Hashem when he looks at you and says, you know, you're also cutting in one day, you know? Or, you know, like, you don't really deserve that thing that you're trying to get. But Hashem says, you know, I'll give you a little slack. I'll give you a little space because that's the way you give other people. That's what the Ramak says. Are we able to give that little, even though they don't deserve it, are we able to give people that little space? The fifth and final idea that we're talking about over here is Kiddush Hashem. So how does it start? This starts a number of months ago. I went to the barber shop here locally, and the barber says, "Oh, Rabbi," not a good thing to hear in public. And there's this other fellow sitting there, it's an Italian gentleman, and he comes up to me and he says, "You know, I live on such and such a road." And I knew this was bad because that such and such a road is the same road that one of the biggest Torah institutions in this community is. A fine, wonderful institutions with many, many, many minyanim in the morning. And I knew this was trouble. And he said to me, he says, Rabbi, why is it that they park so terribly? Why is it that they all, there's these, and he said, it's these young ladies, these young moms who are always turning left at that right hand, that no left hand turn outside Gourmet Glatz. And he went through all the specific infringements in our neighborhood that we all know too well. Where people do and don't do. And he says, you should tell them, you should tell everybody. I'm like, yes, you know, naturally I will rectify all the ills of the world on your behalf. But unfortunately, it brings up a very unfortunate, painful part of that is that, you know, how we drive, people notice the way we drive. And certainly in this neighborhood and elsewhere, people notice who's behind the wheel. This is a cartoon, unfortunately, over here of a picture of, you know, the sort of the way that the you know, ironically, they feel that we run the UN, we drive the UN. But let's not make a mistake. That kind of caricature, that anti-Semitic caricature, we lend credence to those types of images, whether it be when we drive looking like a person who is Shomer Torah Mitzvos, and we cut off people. So like, you know, Evan mentioned when he sent his thing, is to talk about just in the last few decades, just here in the neighborhood. How difficult it's become. People, you know, double parking on Central, people doing illegal turns, do all kinds of things that people do, and how much worse the traffic has got over here. And people notice it. They say, you people. Right? Another example. I'm coming to Shalom's example. I remember Ben Brofman a few years ago actually sent out an email about an incident he had in Dunkin' Donuts parking lot on a Sunday afternoon, you know, where a fellow drives up and puts his car just, you know, with the signals on, and he puts it just outside the entrance. And as you know, it's almost impossible to get in and out of that parking lot on a good day. And so, you know, there is everybody else sort of trying to weave around. Nobody can move anywhere in and out. And he's waiting, and this fellow's in line. And so Ben says to him, you know, he's like, you know, don't you think that you should really, somebody should take you should take care of your car? He says, I'm only going to be a minute. So Ben said, like, you know, with all due respect, we all want to just be a minute. But thanks to you, we're not going to all be a minute. So the man finished, he smiles, finishes, and he's wearing a big yarmulke, it's flying out, makes his order, and goes back to the car and moves it. In the meantime, everybody else, you know, like, in the parking lot. In the meantime, a lady behind Ben was, you know, just came from the gym, and he had a baseball cap, and this lady says to him, he says, isn't it terrible how they think they own the world? Mm-hmm. And so Ben took off his hat, and he says, don't judge us by the worst of us. You know, but think about it. Think about what happens over here. Think about the way that they look in when we drive like that. You know, the way that we think that the world works around us. So it's the Torah talks about Kiddush Hashem. The Torah talks about many dimensions of Kiddush Hashem. Very briefly, just to go through some of them. The Torah tells us in Parshas Emor, in Source 18, V'loisachalu l'shem kodshi, v'niktashti b'soich b'nei Yisrael ne'ashem mekadishchem. Hashem says, don't desecrate my holy name. You should be sanctified among Israel. I am God. What the Mepharshim actually say, that's not referring to the global Kiddush Hashem we know about. That's referring to the way that the Levim and the Kohanim act inside the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. Bring Kiddush into the way you act in the Beis HaMikdash. That's more of a confined way of understanding how Kiddush Hashem works. There's another level, level two, justice. The prophets say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is Amos turning to the people of Israel, Source 19, HaShoyafim al afer oris b'roish talim v'derech anovim yatu v'ish aviv v'aviv yelchu l'anaharo l'man chalel l'shem kodshi. When Jews are acting in an unjust fashion, when the FBI is operating sting operations, and you see Jews on the front page of the local papers, that's the Chilul Hashem. It's injustice in the name of God that Jews are perpetrating. In fact, the Midrash says that's what Avram Avinu was saying when Hashem was destroying Sodom. Avram Avinu says, Chalila lecha me'aseh adavar hazeh. The Midrash says, what does it mean, Chalila? It's a chilul Hashem yourself, Hashem. If you're acting unjustly, it is a chilul Hashem. When there's injustice going on in the world, that is a chilul Hashem. Level two. Level three. You know what the level three is? The Maharosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Greenberg, used to talk about this all the time. Hashem turns to Yechezkel and says, when I send Israel out, in the top of page 8, in the Pasuk Yotes, V'afitzosom ba'goyim v'yizoru ba'aratzois kedarkon v'chalilosom shefatitim. When Hashem says, I'm going to spread Israel throughout all the diaspora, I'm going to judge them for what they deserve. V'yavo al goyim asher bo'u sham v'echalilu es shem kodshi be'emor lohem, am Hashem eileu ma'aratzoye etzayu. You know what? That's a chilul Hashem. Because what people say? They say, these are Jews. They should be in their land, but they're not in their land. There's a chilul Hashem by the fact that we have to be. We live in a galus, that we've been in galus for 2,000 years. That itself is a desecration of Hashem's name because we're His representatives. Level number four. Level number four is, unfortunately, the chilul and kiddush Hashem, which is created through death. As we say on every Shabbos in the Siddur, Ava rachamim shochen meroimim, v'rachavo ma'atzomim, yivkod v'rachamim ha'chassidim v'yishorim ha'atzomim, ki ilo esakodesh shemosru nafshom ha'kiddush Hashem. Not about justice, not about the Beis HaMikdash, not necessarily about being in the diaspora. Where do we create Kiddush Hashem? Unfortunately, sometimes is through our death and throughout the generations, millions upon millions of lives who've been Mekadosh Shem Shemayim, not in their lives, but in their deaths, Rachmana Litzlan. And finally, the last and fifth tier of Kiddush and Chilul Hashem is when you look like you represent the Torah, and the way you act is not appropriate. So the Rambam says in Hilchos Yosarei Torah, these are halachas, these are not. Agada, the Rambam says, V'yesh dvarim acherim shein b'chlal Chilul Hashem. Ushiyase osam God Adam Godol b'Torah in Source 23. Umufurisam b'chasidus, a person who looks like they're great in Torah and they are pious. Dvarim shabrios meranenim acharav bishulam, and they do things which people mock them about. Even though they might not be exact sins, harei zechilul es Hashem kugoyin shelokach ve'eno yodeh d'mei amekach l'alter. They buy and they don't really know exactly how much they need to pay. They're not clear with their cheshbonos. You go on credit unnecessarily, or you're over jolly. You know you're frivolous. You're eating too much. When you hang out in bars, you don't speak to people nicely. You don't speak to people in a nice way. You're an angry person. It all depends on who you are. And I think the Rambam is saying, he talks about it, you know, if a person walks around with a stain on their clothes. And I think that the Rambam is talking about certainly about a Talmid Chacham, but at the end of the day, I think that we all represent Torah Judaism today. Orthodox Judaism is estimated at 20% of world Jewry, which means to say that we are walking representations of what it means to be Orthodox. Right? And wherever we go, we have that representation. The way we act and the way we drive, because it's not anonymous, is also very much part of that. Shalom actually mentioned a story which I think was really a really saline point. Very, very sharp idea is that, you know, the Shalom described an incident, and we can all associate with this. You know, where he left for a particular meeting, and you know how it goes. You have just enough time to get there, and you need to cut corners in order to get there. And if the place one is going is, let's say, Mincha, and you get to Mincha, and you're saying at the Mincha, Nekadesh es Shimcha ba'olam, Hashem, let's sanctify your name in the world. Where's the Kiddush Hashem really going on? In the Mincha, or on the way you got to Mincha, right? That's an important thing to think about, right? And like, we talk about, let's sanctify Hashem's name. You know where we can sanctify Hashem's name? The way we get to Mincha. That makes a big difference, because the means don't justify the ends. I would say one interesting comment, and that is, I once noticed with myself, I had two weddings to get to, two nights in a row, many, many years ago, probably a decade ago. And I noticed that one wedding I got to, I was extremely stressed, and one wedding I got to, I was extremely, I was completely benachas, no problems in the world. Cut me off, no problem, everything was fine and dandy. And in fact, the wedding that was easier to get to was further away, and it was in a more difficult place to reach. And I wondered, what was the difference between the two weddings, one night after the next? And I realized, the one wedding, I had a kibbutz, and I had to be there by a specific time. The other wedding, I didn't. And therefore, because I had a time constraint, that's what put all the stress on the driving. You know what the biggest solution to all of this is? 5 minutes. The solution to everything else. You become the nicest person in the world with 5 minutes extra. You leave to where your destination is with an extra 5 minutes. You can be the most gracious person. You can let in whoever wants. Trucks, buses, anything. It's fine because you have the ability and the space to do it. The difference between the good traffic Torah and negative traffic Torah, in fact, can be a difference of 5 minutes. Anyways, food for further thought. Driving can be our greatest lesson to growth. Rabbi Chanan ben Akash, Baruch Atah Kadosh Baruch Hu, L'zakos Yisrael, L'fichach Yirbo Ein Tormes, Shenemar Adonai Chofetz, Man Tzikoy, Yagdil Torah V'Yadzir.
I'm going to email you a question.